You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher.
Rap Genius, back then I was all for that, like, hip-hop revivalist, real hip-hop flag, you know? Like, yeah. But fuck that now.
Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. This week, we have a conversation with one of our favorite up-and-coming rappers, the Bronx's YC the Cynic. YC got his start with a fantastic 2010 mixtape called You're Welcome, but that was only the beginning. He progressed as an artist in leaps and bounds, up to his most recent record, last year's thought-provoking GNK. You'll find out what those letters stand for a little later in the interview. YC's thoughtful and emotional music deals with themes of identity, belief, and culture in powerful ways. He's also been an activist, an integral part of the Bronx's Rebel Diaz Arts Collective, formed by the group of that name. Their space may have been shut down by greedy landlords, but their mission of helping kids reach their artistic potential still lives on. We talked to YC at the Rap Genius office in Brooklyn. As always on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, we bring you a special kind of audio footnote. Every time you hear this sound,
Rap Genius,
go to rapgenius.com and search for OTL70. From there, you'll find audio, video, and more information to bring you further outside the lines. And now, here's our talk with YC the Cynic. Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm Thanks. Sean, here with YC the Cynic.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming through, man. Appreciate
of course.
It. So for people who might not know you right off the bat, can you say like a little bit about yourself?
I'm YC the Cynic, born and raised in the Bronx, New York. I've been writing for 13 years now. So, just going through life making music.
Nice. And there's a lot in there to talk about. I know you rep the Bronx pretty hard, and we'll go into that and
yeah.
You know, the your connection with Rebel Diaz, who I love, and
cool.
All that kind of stuff. But one of the things about the Bronx in particular is like you rap a lot, particularly recently, and have talked a lot in interviews about like the Bronx and how it's changing and
mm-hmm.
gentrification and things like that, particularly in Hunts Point, which
yeah.
is your native hood. And so I guess I just want to know like what kind of messages you're trying to get across about that, about the Bronx and about its changes like in your art and in your activism.
Well, I'm just trying to bring awareness more so than a concrete change. I just want people to know that this problem exists. Like our community center, you might know our community center was removed because of gentrification, you know, because there was a duplex being built a few blocks away, because the rent was going up, because the owner didn't see a value in the community center being on his property. So I think the only way to prevent those kind of things from happening is to bring awareness to gentrification and everywhere, not only the Bronx.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little about the community center?
Well, the Ardec BX was the brainchild of Rebel Diaz, and I joined right before I started, so I'm a founding member. Rod moved to Hunts Point. Rod started Rebel Diaz when I was like 13 or 14, and through just like regular activity, playing basketball, that he would come by to the studio. We kind of build a rapport, and he told me about the idea to start the community center. And, you know, being a young kid, all I heard was like, oh, there's a studio. So I was all for it. I didn't really understand what he was trying to do. But yeah, we took over an abandoned candy factory and just, like, remodeled the whole entire thing and created, like, a safe space for only young people, but for people in under, like, privileged areas to just, like, find new talents or grow the talents that they have, or, you know, be exposed to things that they're not necessarily always able to be exposed to.
Rap Genius.
Yeah, I saw something you did for Complex where you walked through, you know, the Bronx and specifically that building, and it seems so sad that nothing looked like, at that point, I don't know how long after the closing that was that you filmed that, but it looked like nothing was being done with that building. They still had some of the original art on the walls and logos and stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm not even necessarily sure, like, what they're using that space for, but they still have, like, the members' murals on the outside. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really sad. And about rappers in the Bronx, I know you've sort of, you know, have about, like, you may be next up and that kind of stuff. I was curious what the hip-hop scene is in the Bronx now, and if it's tough being a rapper from there when people think the Bronx and hip-hop, the first thing that jumps into their head is, like, 1973 or whatever. like, did you know? You know.
That's awesome. I think there's a lot of talented MCs in the Bronx that are, like, preparing, like, bubbling, you know, that about to be known by everyone. There's, like, folks like V.I., EuroLeague, and Devo, and, like, Dolly Bernays. There's a lot of ill MCs. And being from the Bronx, I don't know if it's any more difficult than anywhere else in New York to get noticed. It just feels like people are less willing to listen to a hip hop artist from New York just because there's this like stigma. But you know, I'm up for challenges like that. my views on New York hip hop is a whole nother thing.
Well, so let's get into it. What do you gotta say? Name names. Names.
No,
I wanna hear it.
Can't name names. I got a lot of different views. I love the Bronx and I represent the Bronx and, like, everything that I do, but I don't necessarily feel like I have to bear the burden of a whole city or state because I was born there, or I don't necessarily agree with the notion that my music has to sound a way because I was born in the city. I think that's pretty stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I'll leave it at that.
Sure. Well, no, I mean, New York has definitely kind of got associated with a kind of neo, you know, boom bap kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what people think New York rap now sounds like, you know, a DJ Premier record circa, you know, 94 or whatever.
Yeah, and there hasn't really been a New York artist to kind of, like, break out and break that, I guess, besides Nicki Minaj, but people don't really associate her with New York hip-hop.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, very, very cool. So what, your first tape, You're Welcome, that was, like, pretty much all over the kind of beats we're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like my opinion now came from like experience and getting older and learning. But back then I was all for that, like, hip hop revivalist, real hip hop flag, you know? Like,
yeah.
But fuck that now. Can I curse?
Yeah, of course. Yes.
Cool. Yeah.
Is that why you did the tape over those beats? It was like,
yeah,
that was what you're really feeling at the time.
Exactly. That's exactly, like, what I wanted to bring at the moment. I think a lot of times when people first start in New York, they're so fueled by that what's playing on the radio and being the opposite of that. So that's kind of my inspiration for You're Welcome. But I was also, like, 18, 17, so I was stupid.
Well, that, I mean, that tape is different than a lot of your later work in that it's very, like, what you traditionally think of as lyrical, right? Lots of, like, 3 and 4 syllable rhymes and lots of, like, changing of flow patterns and stuff like that.
Yeah, I didn't really know what I was doing when it comes to making music. I like in every record that I do, every project that I do, to, like, just like a new kind of plateau, like I'm conquering something new. Yeah. So You're Welcome was my first introduction to recorded music, and I was just trying to rhyme well. And then every other one, I was trying to find a new aspect of artistry. I finally think I'm getting somewhere.
I wanted to ask about that, because you said something in about saying, like, you started out obsessed with, you know, more traditional lyricism, than we hear on, like, You're Welcome. And then you had, I think it was a conversation with a jazz player. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And then learned something about expanding your palate a little bit.
Yeah, it was kind of like an argument. And even though I never let him know that he won, I kept arguing with him. He said something that really stuck with me. Just the notion that being clever isn't, like, important is childish. In music, being clever is, like, the least important thing in music. It's about emotional connection and, you know. And that was my whole thing. Like, my favorite rapper was Cassidy. I wanted to think of new punchlines, and to hear that, it was just like, shit.
Rap Genius.
gotta start.
Rethink everything. Yeah. You've definitely been very open in your recent work, like, about your feelings, about your life, in addition to the kind of thematic stuff you do that we'll get to later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've talked lately about how, you know, you're making a career as a rapper now.
Yeah.
And that you know, in lyrics, you've talked openly about how, about your mother, about her struggles to get a graduate degree while, you know, working, while raising 3 kids, and that she wasn't super thrilled when you decided to not go to school in order to pursue music.
Yeah, not at all.
has that changed over the past few years?
Yeah, I think with a lot of artists that I know, it only starts to change when they're like concrete things that she might things that parents might recognize as, like, oh, you were on XXL, or oh, you were on, you know, Vibe or whatever. When things that make parents proud, or money, then they lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. There's so much stuff with the new album with G&K, or the newest, I guess you're at work on a newer one. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that really grabbed me about it was you're writing from different perspectives.
Yeah.
You know, each of the letters in the title stands for a different perspective, and you kind of write from each of those. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping you could break that down for our audience a little bit.
Well, G&K, I usually don't like to say it, but stands for Gods, Niggas, and Kings. And my original idea for it was just kind of like the idea that a person of color can walk down the street and be called out 3 different things by 3 different people on, like, the same block, and what it actually means, like, if there are similarities, if there are differences. But what the album turned into was more just like my perspective on the unseen, like things that exist but aren't necessarily seen, like history and mythological, like, figures and religion. So it turned into a more personal thing than just like the original concept. But I think that was for the best.
Rap Genius.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about mythology specifically, because you referenced kind of, you know, especially Greek mythological figures, a lot, you know, on that record and other places as well. So I was curious as, like, what your relationship is to that mythology. Was that something you dipped your sort of toes in just for this record, or were you around it before? Like,
kind of. It was kind of just for this record, or the timing.
Yeah.
Like, overlap. I just like to rap about whatever I'm interested in at the moment. I get really caught up in like research. so when I got into that topic, it was just like no turning back, and it infiltrated my music.
Nice. You know? So favorite Greek god?
No favorite. I don't know.
Nice. And another thing there is, you know, there and elsewhere in your catalog, you use a lot of biblical imagery.
Yeah.
Right? But specifically as imagery, just as, you know, I mean to say not in like a particularly devout way. So I was just curious about your thoughts about using religious imagery, religious language.
I think religion is a great way to connect with people, no matter what you believe in. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm still trying to figure it out, as I think a lot of smart people are. But I think it's one of the most powerful ways to connect with people. Mm-hmm. So any chance I get, I like to do that. Use it.
Yeah. And jumping back to the GNK, the middle letter of the three, what I'll euphemistically call the N-word. Its use and its history is like all over that record, and absolutely, especially in the song of that name, right? Mm-hmm. That you actually are called the N-word. Have your views on the word and its use or its importance or its power changed over the years, over the course of your life?
I've gone through stages, but I think this generation, a generation that has grown up hearing it and saying it to each other, have a different perspective on it, a different connection to it than the generation before. So I've never been opposed to using it, even though I understand why people wouldn't want it to be used. It's really strange to be able to like relate to why people won't want it to be used, and still, like, and still have your own connection with it. It's kind of like being inside, looking outside of a window, I guess. Right now, I feel the same, but I'm battling on whether I'm okay with other people using it, and I'm not necessarily sure yet. You know?
Wow. Interesting. So in your music currently, you're not. You're not using it, or?
Oh, I'm definitely
using it. You are using it. Yeah.
I'm definitely using it, but it's a little different when, right now I'm in the best position that I've ever been musically. So there's more people than there's ever been listening. So with people knowing my music comes people saying the words to it. So I'm figuring out now, whether I'm comfortable with other people using it or, and if I'm not, what that means for me creatively.
Right, what that means for your performances.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like that's not something a lot of people grapple with, that they just kind of do their songs and perform them and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah.
You know, it's often, as you point out, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but I also feel like whatever decision I come to or however I end up feeling about it, it'll shape how I feel about it in real life also, mm-hmm, outside of music. So I guess I'm just trying to grapple with whether I'm comfortable with other people saying it in general.
Sure. Was there a particular like concert you were at or clip you saw or something that got you really
Not necessarily. It was just kind of, I think it was hearing Dave Chappelle talk, mm-hmm, about how he said a joke and people laughed in a way that he wasn't comfortable with, like how he hears people laugh all the time, but that particular laugh made him not want to do it anymore. Sure. Made him think the message was getting lost, and I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, and another GNK theme that pops up a lot is Biggie and Tupac.
Oh, yeah.
And so to start out in the song Murphy's Law, you have pretty much a whole verse of Notorious Thugs that pops up. So I was just wondering if, what the story was behind that, if there was like a thematic reason or it was just something you kind of did in the moment and that...
Well, it was kind of in the moment. Like, I think the flow fit perfectly. Mm-hmm. But I think it fit the concept of the song as well. Not necessarily that verse, but just like, but I don't know, like detrimental aspects of music mm-hmm. being popular, and maybe attributing to, the evolution. That's not really even a word, but, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, you reference What's Beef on that song also mm-hmm. with some stuff in the background, and that seems like another, you know, example of a song that maybe, you know, borders on being a little too sort of real and dangerous in a way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But with Tupac, it was all straightforward. Like, I quoted him in the Pox, and I named the song after him. I've heard a lot of people using that quote afterwards, like recently. Maybe not one. Wish I didn't use it.
This is the "I will spark the mind that changes the world" quote. He said. What is it about Pac's legacy that you relate to? I know that you've said in interviews, at least at the time of making the record, that you weren't even necessarily the hugest fan of his music.
I'm not a huge fan. Outlaw is more of a huge Pac fan. But I just love the way he was able to be himself, and I don't really know how to explain it, but Rebel Diaz are like mentors to me, and they were born and raised into activism, but I don't necessarily have that same connection with it. Like, it wasn't around me my whole life. Or wasn't like forced to be that. So I still have both sides. I'm still influenced by like ignorant aspects of like life, or just like, you know. And I love that Pac was able to play both sides, to be all of that and not be looked at as like a hypocrite, or, you know.
Yeah. You've had that balance going on the whole time in your work, I think. Like, even on the first record, you had that line about, like, only dude not hugging his block, hugging his art, you know, and that kind of balance.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So...
That's dope that you even...
We go back, man. We go back. We go back.
6 years ago, man.
Yeah. So I was curious about something... about, since we're, you know, at a website and sort of loosely speaking media, mm-hmm. you talk a couple times about critics and journalists and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In Driver's Seat and in Heaviest Cross.
Yeah.
You have that great line in Driver's Seat about journalists being willing to, you have the line, break your back to get closer to the authentic. And uh-huh. I'm just curious, like, what inspired that? Like, what was the kind of... You can say it.
Well, I won't say any names, but there's the one in particular that I keep getting new reasons to not like, like a well-respected writer. But my views on critics is that Homeboy Sandman has this like super influential line to me that goes. Something like, I don't call hip hop a game because ain't no plan taking place, and I was with that for the longest time until I started to see that, until I started to feel like these writers are the things that are blocking you from the audience, and that it might be in my best interest to play mm-hmm. to play the game, you know, to make myself see it as a game and to do what I have to do to reach the people. So no, I don't necessarily agree with putting numbers or grades on art, but I still think it's necessary for the time being to be cool and cordial with everyone so I could reach the people.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things about your sort of realm of influences you've talked a lot about, I know, you know, CeeLo, you obviously shout out Lauryn Hill a lot on a couple, you know, a couple songs, different things like that. One thing that stuck out to me was that you more than once kind of place yourself in the lineage of Rakim. You say, you know, Rakim is, you know, Rakim's the father and Nas is the son, and then, you know, and then one song you go far as say, like, you know, I'm in that lineage as well. I'm kind of like a part of that. And so hoping you can talk about that a little bit.
Well, it's more so just like, you know, hip hop, like just, you know, saying things that sound cool. Mm-hmm. And it's more so about my love to talk about like religion and God and the fact that like Rakim said, he's the God. I like to make plays on that.
Mm-hmm. More than any specific connection to his style.
Exactly. But I have been, you know, I've heard those comparisons into KRS and to everyone.
Mm-hmm. What's one that really surprised you? Someone said, hey, you sound like, and you're just like, what are you talking about?
I don't really remember all the comparisons much. I don't know. But I like Big L a lot. People say I sound like Big L, and I don't hear it, but I appreciate
You'll
it.
Take it. Yeah. You'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one particular bit, you know, Al was obviously known for his wordplay and punchlines and stuff. And like one bit of wordplay that you do a lot that I was hoping you could like expand on a little bit is you play on the word profit a lot.
Oh,
with the F and with the PH, right? The kind of dual meaning of it.
Yeah.
And so hoping you talk about that a little bit.
That's awesome that you. Okay, that's cool. I just think it's really interesting. What do you call it? Like, is that a homophone? I don't think anything is coincidence. I just think that money is oftentimes a hindrance to creativity. So just the fact that those words are that closely related is super interesting to me. Anytime that I could make it fit into a song, I like to use it.
Rap Genius.
And you know, one of the brand new, you know, right a few days before you came here, you know, as we're speaking today, you dropped a new video.
Yeah.
For a song, but the song's not on any record.
Yeah, the song is actually old. It was left off of the Good Morning Midnight EP with Yuri Beats because I got hit with a cease and desist like a day after I released the song. But it was stupid because when I sent it out as a single and I put featuring like the artist that I sampled, which was dumb. I didn't think that they
so
would
you're asking
notice.
For it.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't think they would notice. I didn't think they would care.
Right.
But they did. So, but I always loved that song, so I like waited a year and made a video for it,
mm-hmm.
put it out, didn't use their name.
Right.
It's been so far.
What was it like to get that letter? I've talked to plenty of people who have been in situations like that, Pharoah Monch most notably.
Oh man, I can't even compare to that, kind of, to the Pharoah Monch letter.
Yeah, yeah.
It was scary, it was cool though, that they
A little bit of a we made a moment.
A little bit. Yeah. I tried to get them to have some decency and like, hey, like it's a dope song. Listen to it. Maybe we can figure something out. But nah, they have no decency. They don't care.
Wow. You mentioned Rebel Diaz a couple times, and you know, meeting Rod and starting up with them. Mm-hmm. So you met them. I know they know your brother as well. I know from talking to them. Did they know him first?
Yeah, they knew my brother first because he's more like, well, he's older, so he was more out there. I was just like this 14, 15 year old kid. So they seen him on the basketball courts and in the studio
mm-hmm.
more than me.
And so what's your relationship like with Rebel Diaz now? Every time I see those guys, they speak so highly of you.
Yeah, those are my big brothers, man. They're in Greece right now, killing it. I'm super proud of them. Yeah, it's all good.
Nice. And you've done some touring with them around specifically activism stuff, the U.S. Social Forum.
Yeah, kind of we did the U.S. Social Forum in 2009, I believe it was, or 2010. We've gone to the School of Americas together in Georgia like twice, which is a crazy experience.
What, that's like dudes with machine guns and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like helicopters flying super low, watching everything.
For our audience who might not know the School of the Americas, I think they've changed the name now, but I think so. But they are a base in Georgia that teaches Latin American army officers how to torture people.
Torture tactics.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then there's like this march at the end where I went for the first time when I was 18, and we didn't see the march at the end, but I went last year. It was so crazy. They read out the names of the people that were tortured and killed. And people walk around with like these picket signs. It's so crazy. You could see like each name, somebody else reacts. It's such a heavy moment. So we did that. We did a bunch of tours, just like as artists, without that, you know, activism being the main thing, which are all dope. But yeah, man, they taught me a lot about being a touring artist or being professional artists.
Mm-hmm. What kind of stuff? I mean, they were already up and running as a group by the time you.
Yeah, they were already them, right? They were already putting out projects. I was in a group called Waco Division as a kid, and that was just like people from the neighborhood that had a studio. So I didn't know that I had to go to open mics. I didn't know that I had to. I didn't know how to perform. I didn't know how to leave the state, and they were doing all of that. They were like the people that got me to see that it could be a real thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Nice. And you mentioned open mics there. I know you there's a bit of an open mic scene in kind of the late aughts that you were a part of with some of our good friends in Brown Bag Collective. Soulcon's been on the show.
Yeah.
Scene also has been a guest on the show.
Yeah, right? I've never actually seen Scene in open mic.
No?
But
yeah, you see, Scene's a little more of a homebody.
Yeah. Well, he lived in California
for a while. Then. Yeah.
But yeah, that's where I met Soulcon, that's where I met Final Outlaw, that's where I met Homeboy Sandman. It's actually great to think that the people that I met there, like, doing it. That's awesome.
Yeah. What was that scene like?
It was really good. It was like a family reunion, like, twice a week almost, you know? And we were all our support systems. And when that died, it was really difficult to keep in touch with everybody and it was scary because, as you know, music has, there's like no formula and there's no like paved road to it. So once like your friends in the journey all kind of like separate, it gets scary.
Yeah. What kind of venues were these that this stuff was happening at?
Well, there was EO Dub at the Pyramid. There was all that at New Eureka Poets Cafe that Homeboy Sandman hosted at the time. Mm-hmm. There was Bonfire at the Barbie Poetry Club. That was like the biggest. That was the biggest family reunion. Where else was there? Those are like the biggest ones.
And those are more poetry venues than hip hop venues. At least,
yeah,
traditionally.
The Barbie Poetry Club and New Eureka are definitely poetry events.
And so that was no DJs, just
no there was for the bonfire hip-hop kind of just like takes over. There's so many hip-hop artists that you have to accommodate, right? to the
if you hip-hop. Have people rhyming,
yeah, there's gonna be most of the list are gonna be rappers, so
right.
you better have a DJ. But what was cool about all that at New Eurekan was you had to rap over a live band, and that was really difficult for a lot of you know, newcomers. It taught you a lot about performing.
I bet. And you've always been one, speaking of like support networks and stuff, you've always been one to find, at least recently, to find a couple of collaborators and stick with them, whether it's producers or video directors, mm-hmm. or, you know, even on the last record, I don't think you had any guests, right?
Yeah, I didn't have any guests at all.
Why?
Just a couple singers.
Why kind of keep it tight, such a tight network of collaborators?
Oh, I think the people that I like the most in this kind of like new hip hop, I guess, era scene are the people that are just like that. They keep to themselves and have a small group of collaborators and have a strong team that are very few people. So I kind of take from that, and I want to have like the same kind of feel. I want people to know when they see something visually or when they hear music that it's part of the YC The Sending brand. Mm-hmm. Just like when you hear like a Chance the Rapper song or when you hear Kendrick Lamar.
Mm-hmm. You know it's them. Mm-hmm. And one sort of winding down, one thing I had to ask about was the name, YC The Sending. Very unusual. Uh-huh. First of all, what does YC stand for?
I can't tell you.
You can't say. Okay. That's fair. I'll take that. And the cynic part. Yeah. I know, you know, you had at least a couple of references to, you know, ancient philosophy and stuff. So
yeah.
I was wondering if at least in part the cynic was a joke on, like, you know, the cynic philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I just say whatever. When people ask me, I say whatever I can think of at the moment of what it means. But the truth is I added the cynic for like, Google purposes.
The truth comes out. Because there's the other...
Well, just the letters in general.
Yeah,
impossible to.
Yeah, definitely. And so, what are you up to now?
I really want to finish this album. I'm excited about putting out some more videos. It's just really like back to the drawing board for me. I gotta create.
That's really exciting. Well, we definitely look forward to. I mean, anything else you want to tell our audience about before you go? Any upcoming stuff?
Thanks for listening. You guys are cool.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming through.
Thanks, man.
That was our talk with YC The Cynic. If you like what you hear, make sure to visit us on iTunes. From there, you can subscribe so that you'll never miss an episode. You can also leave us a rating. The more 5-star reviews we get, the better chance we have of continuing to get great guests like YC The Cynic. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is created and written by Sean Sotero.
It's more so about my love to talk about like religion and God.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Helicopters flying super low, watching everything.
Our invaluable intern is Julia Hannafin.
Preparing, like bubbling, you know, that's about to be known by everyone.
Our music is by Psionic.
I got hit with a cease and desist like a day after I released the song.
Make sure to join us again 2 weeks from today. We'll see you then, Outside the Lines.
After they loaded out, just like got drunk and had a dance party at the house because it was all we could do.
That's perfect.
Like played 90s R&B really loud and sang along and danced. It was like, we're not going out, we're not going anywhere.
That's great.
It was like all we could do.
That was so hot.
Yeah.